go. Episode 547, No Laugh Track Podcast here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, on the stage at Acme Comedy Company. My name is Justin Severson, each and every week here talking to mostly the headliners, including this week, Ronan Hirschberg, three-time guest here on the podcast.
Yeah.
Three different weeks now headlining here at Acme.
Yeah. So some headliners don't do it. They bring their feature.
You know, sometimes it's a little weird. Like if we have the, you know, people that show up just do it for like a Friday, Saturday thing.
Okay, maybe.
I'll talk to somebody early in the week that's working a different week, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I mean, 9 out of 10, it's the headliner. For sure.
Yeah, good to be back.
Hell yeah.
And yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah.
I know people really need to know this. This is the first time you've been here not in January headlining.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's like beautiful outside.
It's possible. It's we actually.
It's a major.
You can exist here and not have to trudge through snow.
Yeah, it's a major. It's a major upgrade.
It is. It has to be. There's got a ton of things to talk about, including last night's show was fantastic.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, thanks, man. Earlier, you're like, I saw the show, but then you didn't say whether you liked it. So really, really built suspense.
I was here.
It was just dead silence. You were like, I saw the show last night. So I'm glad you built the suspense till this moment.
That's right. And I liked it. And it was fun.
Thanks. Yeah, it was fun. I always love this club. It's one of the really good clubs. And there's, you know, it's getting very rare. It's a great club, you know. So
right.
You know. So I love this place. Yeah.
So what is the stat? So I seem like a lot of new jokes from last year.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the status? Have you recorded since you were here last year? Correct.
Yeah, I recorded a special. It's about to be out. Took a long time. We've been working on it for like 7 months. But it's about to be out. So this is, for the most part, besides, you know, my mom joke, which I used to plug my shirts like a whore, it's all like new material, you know?
That's interesting. You did the mom joke last night.
Yeah, just to, you know, like I said, sell the shirts at the very end.
Do you hate that? Do you hate that you have to do that?
Would
you still? I mean, you have shirts left. If they were all gone, would there be another printing?
Yeah, no, there always is. Yeah,
nice.
No, I mean, I actually like talking to people after the show, and I need to get a new shirt. I need to get a shirt for a new joke, kind of. You know, it's just been so long, but yeah, I don't mind. I actually don't mind. I actually like. I stopped getting shirts for a long time, and it's just leaving money on the table. It's so stupid.
Yeah,
so,
right.
And then I got shirts again. I'm like, what the hell was I doing? I'm just so bad with money. But like,
either way, it doesn't work.
Yeah, but I like, you know, I actually don't mind the shirts. I mean, I don't mind talking to people, and you know, just getting a sense of the show. You know, I'm basically, I want people to compliment me so I can feel less lonely. So I like that aspect.
Are you hearing that?
It's funny, like the laughter's not enough. But it should be, because the laughter, like you kind of know how well it was received after the show, just every, that's comedy, right? But I still need a little more, you know what I mean? One-on-one.
I mean, at some level, people are not going out and meeting the audience after shows, and they do have to just take the
right,
laughs.
just take the actual, very verifiable
the thing that you do for a living.
Yeah, they should really only sell merch for stuff that doesn't have laughs, like a drama or something, so you can like get like every play that's not a comedy. They should sell merch just to gauge whether the audience liked it. You know,
it's interesting.
Comedy is the one thing that sells merch where you. I mean, obviously you're making money, but it's one thing where you don't really need like to talk to the audience afterwards, but it's still nice, you know.
For two, yeah. Well, at some point you could just leave a box out there with a little.
Sure, that's my dream.
Here, just throw some money.
My dream. I mean,
write down your credit card number.
I want to become a theater act for a lot of reasons, but I'd say number one is just so when I enter. I love this club, but the one thing about clubs is just having to enter the same door that the audience is entering, and then having people just be like, "Hey. Is it gonna be good tonight? Hey, you gonna be funny tonight?" Like that experience. That's mainly why I want to be famous, just so I can be able to go through like a separate door. Because there's nothing that makes you feel more amateurish than like seeing the people before the show. You know?
Holding the door for someone while they're coming into the club to see you.
Or
right?
if the bathroom is not, like some places the bathroom's not, they don't have a bathroom in the green room.
Right, so right.
Just like peeing next to someone who's like, hey, you're the face on the poster, you know? The worst.
They have their phone out and you're like, are they looking at something or taking a picture?
The worst, there are some clubs where there's no bathroom in the green room. And it's also like an individual toilet bathroom. And I pretty much always have to take a shit. So there are many shows where I'm just, there was a club recently. Where was it? Oh, yeah, it was Key West. Great club, but like it's just one bathroom. And I just shit really bad. And I'm in the bathroom shitting. And there's just a line of audience members waiting to use the bathroom. And then I open the door and it's just me, and they know they're gonna see me perform like very soon, and now they're fucking smelling my shit. It's like the worst. I just need a fucking theater entrance. I had that recently.
Did you feel like you had to address that on stage for those five people that saw you leave the show?
Honestly, like usually I address shit. That was so embarrassing. I literally did. If something, you know, something's embarrassing when I don't address it, because I address most things.
Yeah,
that was like too much. You know, I mean, it's mainly the next person. I mean, it was a small crowd, a small club.
Good point, because everybody after him could blame him.
Except they're all in line seeing me leave. But yeah, I mean, that person is there was no Febreze in there, so that guy's just smelling my shit, and then he's about to hear me do jokes. It's fairly gross.
However, what if he was like a super fan and this was like his...
A nice moment.
He's like, I mean, this is a one-in-a-lifetime experience that fans are going to get.
I'm not doing terribly, but I'm not doing have super fans in Key West level good. That's not, you know. Once I have super fans...
You're not
going to
be selling them jars of your farts or anything?
Once I have super fans... I actually had a couple of fans who were like visiting, but... You know, definitely no locals.
You had you're talking about your visit to Key West on stage already.
Yeah, well, I was doing a show. And I guess it devolved into a Q&A. I don't know how. It was a weird crowd. And at some point, someone asked me, what brings you to Key West? Which is a funny thing to do, to have someone ask you while you're in the situation that answers that question.
I mean, you were arriving at the airport, getting a car. Sure.
Yeah,
totally
right?
Totally makes sense to be asked that
Completely
question.
Completely makes sense, yeah. Mm-hmm. But once you're on stage and the person is... I mean, it's just insane. It's just like, it was a very existential... It's like that old Mitch Hedberg joke where it's like, I went to a radio station, they're like, who are you? And I don't know if they were being really deep or I just went to the wrong radio station, you know? It was that kind of moment. I just like, it was very profound. What brings you to Key West?
I'm sorry. I'm sure. Since then, you probably thought of a million things if you could have, like, smart ass things like to tell them.
Honestly, the best answer is I have no idea. I don't know why I'm doing this anymore.
I'm questioning it right now as we speak. Yeah, I can hear that. The funniest person in the Twin Cities contest started last night. There were four contestants, each doing 3 minutes, part of the amateur contest that's run here each and every summer at Acme. Did you pay attention at all?
No. I normally would have, but it's kind of hard to like hear everyone. You got to stand in the back. I actually did for the other comics a little, but like I can't stand in that little back room just for, you know. And also, these are comics who've never even been paid, right?
Oh, correct. That's absolutely one of the rules.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not really, I don't really, like, I don't have, I'm sure they did great or it's cool they're doing this, but I can't watch.
It can be difficult.
You have to have done comedy for 42 years for me to watch it. Anything else is just like, just a little amateur. It's
three decades. Come back to me in a...
It's tough with comedy because... I think, especially for the first, unless you're like a wunderkind, for the first, I don't know, decent amount of time, it's just like, you might have good jokes, but the performance ability is always just like a little, I don't know what the term, make-a-wishy or something from my perspective, you know what I mean? I don't know. You kind of have to be dead inside a little to really...
Make-A-Wish is actually pretty accurate.
It's like, yeah, it's just like uncomfortable for everyone. You know what I mean?
Like, we're happy you're having this opportunity.
Right, right, right. To really get to a certain level, you have to be dead inside. I mean that in a positive way. To the point where you're not excited to be up there. And then the audience is no longer uncomfortable.
Oh my God, that's
hilarious. And then you do great, but it's too late for you to feel joy.
Did you do stuff like that in your early days? Did you do contests like that?
Yeah, yeah, I've done contests.
Where were those held?
I've gotten runner up in every contest I've done, which I say that's the best place to be. You never want to get one. Winners, that's for hacks. You know what I mean?
I mean, there's a whole series I don't host. So there's a comic, Brian Miller, has been hosting a series of podcasts here about talking to people that have done the contest. Mm-hmm. And that's been coming out a lot, that it's winning these doesn't necessarily mean stardom, that you're going to continue on and like you're already in the right path. Like, you could win that and kind of go nowhere. Second, come back the next year.
I will agree that winning Funniest Person in Minneapolis is definitely not a guarantee of stardom. I don't think anything's a guarantee of stardom.
A sex tape that's released behind your back. That's guaranteed success.
Contests are a necessary evil. You have to do them. And you know, it's important to like go through it. I always hated it. I think everyone hates it. It's just too much. It's not really like, it's dealing with your skill under pressure a lot, which is like, I don't like to deal with. I don't flourish under pressure.
Fair enough.
I don't know. It's just like not, you know, I don't like it. And then when you're in it, you kind of think that's the thing that matters the most in comedy.
For sure.
Being able to survive under pressure. And it's like, not really. I don't know.
Yeah.
What matters the most in comedy is like writing good material and like developing, you know, and challenging yourself material-wise.
Absolutely.
Not some kind of ego competition with other people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The real work comes with... It's only competition to yourself, that your past self, and trying to go deeper and go more original or unique with material, you know?
Speaking
of material...
Congrats
to the winner and...
Yeah, right. Yes, they're on the right path, I guess. I want to talk about some of your, on stage last night, you talk about your girlfriend and maybe both being hypochondriacs,
mm-hmm,
correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Did you see this thing, this news story that came out this week about, RFK Jr., whatever, this...
He has like a worm in his brain, or what is it?
Yes. Brain worms like the one RFK Jr. had are real and more common than you might think. So how worried are you... About
brain worms?
About brain worms. That's what I want to know. When you heard this
week,
did you
go, vow to never, ever be worried by anything that moron says, so I can't break that now.
What? That's my guy.
People love him. People love him. I don't think people realize how crazy he is.
I mean, it's sort of in his eyes, but yeah, maybe not. Maybe not.
But by the way, I get him. I totally get him. Like, I understand. It was kind of funny, actually. I was talking. I'm not a conspiracy theorist guy. In fact, most of the time I will be like, that's probably not true. I'm like the opposite of a conspiracy theorist.
Same, I think.
Even when it's obvious, I'm like, yeah, probably not. Okay. For every situation, I'm like, this is probably a really boring answer. The sexy answer is rarely true. You know what I mean? But I was talking to my buddy, this comedian. And it's one of the scenes where you feel like you're on the same page and then you realize you're not. We're talking about how dumb RFK Jr. is, how much of a fucking crazy person he is, you know, and how he's like a terrible, threat to democracy, all this stuff. And then my buddy goes, I get why he's into conspiracies. You know, if my uncle was assassinated by the American government and my father was assassinated by the American government. I'd also, and I'm like, oh, I don't think that.
Did you tell him that?
And I'm like, you're the one who's. Yeah, I told him that. I don't believe conspiracy theories for the most part because I don't believe all these people who I know as idiots are suddenly experts on it was so funny when that bridge collapsed. You know, what was it?
Ship hit the bridge, yeah, a few months ago.
And so many people who lived in their parents' basements were bridge collapse experts. I had no idea.
Yes.
They were like, looking at the way that bridge collapsed. And I'm like, you're unemployed. Like, like I don't, like, the idea of people being expert, it was 9/11. I don't know if a building would fall like that. How the fuck do you know? First of all, that's never happened. Two planes have never gone into a building like that. So you have nothing to base it on. Like,
you failed every science class we had together.
But that's not how it worked. It's like, how the fuck do you know? Yeah. So I don't buy, like, conspiracy theories. So I've always, but I get RFK Jr. because, like, it's, to me, there's conspiracy theories are kind of like religion. There's a more interesting answer for stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, evolution is way more interesting than creationism. You know what I mean? And gets into way more details. It's also why I hate, like, the horoscope and stuff. Because, like, isn't it cool that on this month or whatever, it's like, no, what's really cool is our brain's ability to find patterns when they're not there, which is how, you know, horoscopes work. That's actually very interesting and somewhat magical, our brain's ability to just see the patterns and avoid the things contradicting those patterns. And when we bind ourselves into the mythology, the simplistic mythology of horoscopes, we're ignoring more complex, interesting things, you know? And
God, you just reminded me that when I first started dating my wife, she would post freaking horoscope stuff on Facebook. Weekly, probably.
Right.
That was almost a deal breaker. This is fucking ridiculous. You don't really believe this, do you?
It's tough. They all act like they don't, but they do. They're like, no, it's just fun, but they fucking believe it.
Yeah. Oh, it's just fun.
I actually
like, don't. Like a religion.
But I actually do, like, people are like, it's just fun. But I actually, I'm like, no, it makes me not trust your cognitive abilities. Like, it makes me not.
Yeah.
You want to be with someone who has a healthy level of skepticism, of critical thinking.
Yes.
Like, it's a worrisome thing if you think when the stars align here, that means your personality. I had a bit on my last special, like, I could disprove the horoscope in one line. Hitler and Mr. Rogers are both Aquariuses.
That's,
you know,
right.
I mean?
I remember that. Yes.
Which is not true. Neither of them are Aquariuses. But whatever. I like to piss people off with blue horoscopes.
Right.
But, like, it's like, I love when I make fun of horoscopes too. People are like, it's not that simple. There's different things. Shut up. You're a moron. There's no other way to look at it.
Whatever. Yeah, because everyone born on my day, everyone born the day I was born, we have so much in common, every one of us.
Right.
Just look at it that way. It's obviously ridiculous.
The thing everyone wants in life is to have meaning. So for RFK Jr., of course it makes sense that the government's out to get him and that he's this important person because his father and uncle were so important. And if he just accepted the fact that he just can't fill those shoes, that would be tough. So he has to believe in conspiracies. He has to be the one to be right about everything. And that way he has the significance his father and his uncle had. Oh, he sees all these conspiracies that other people don't see. He's special, just like his father and his uncle. If he didn't have these conspiracy beliefs, he would just have to accept the fact that he's just a fucking normal dude who can't fill his uncle and his father's shoes,
yeah.
Which is fine. A lot of us can't fill, you know, accept your place. But, like, he needs, and that's true for a lot of conspiracy theorists, they need to have these beliefs that make them special. Like, they're special in their ability to see something other people can't see.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think about the one guy that I grew up with that is very vocal on social media about conspiracies is, where did he end up moving from Minnesota? He lives in Florida, for one, which is perfect. And I don't get into it with those people because it's just there's no. I feel like I'm using logic with things.
You have to have a shared, like, belief this is reality on some level.
There you go.
You know what I mean? Like, I have a friend who thinks, like, the American government created ISIS. Not that they caused a vacuum for ISIS to flourish, that it was literally made up by America, you know?
Mm.
And their proof is that ISIS is not, you know, all the other terrorist organizations are different, like, acronyms, but ISIS is just, like, as if, like, that's the clue to it being fucked up. But I'm like,
what?
So you can believe the American government, I guess, made up this whole terrorist organization, which, by the way, I think that person then sees headlines where the America leaving places create a vacuum for ISIS to flourish.
Sure.
And they probably confuse that with a conspiracy theory. But, like, if you believe that, and if you believe the American government is that nefarious and able to actually be competently able to achieve that, then why talk about anything else in life?
Mm-hmm.
You have no trust. And then when this person demands stuff of the American government, I'm like, well, you already admit they're evil.
That's a great point.
So why just give up?
Yeah.
Every time I see any kind of protester protesting, like, the evils of the American government, I'm like, if you believe that, who are you protesting to?
Yeah.
They've already won.
That's a great point.
Like, Alex Jones should just be, like, shutting his mouth. Yeah. If you really thought that, you know, which of course he does.
That's great. That is fantastic. We need to talk about some other stuff you've been doing.
I know, that's not funny.
So, you have a Kickstarter going for a short film you want to put together.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk all about that.
Yeah. I wrote a feature a couple years ago with my buddy. It's a thriller. And we condensed it into a short film, a 20-minute short film. It's about a caretaker with a patient, an old guy with dementia, kind of warm, friendly old guy. And one day a record's playing. She goes to his house, and one day, or apartment. One day a record's playing, and his eyes light up like he's, like, you know, remembering the song. She's like, oh, do you remember the song?
Yeah.
Thinking he's going to say some kind of fun, you know, nice memory.
Sure.
And he just goes out of nowhere, the song was playing the night I strangled Rosie. And then he kind of, like, you know, doesn't say anything else about that. So it just kind of propels her onto this investigation to see what that meant, whether it was a joke or actually, you know, something involving a crime he committed in the past, you know. So, and she's a caretaker, so there's certain things where she can't really, like, she's not allowed to disclose information, you know, so she can't easily go to the cops unless she has more information, you know what I mean? And honestly, even that, it's like, once someone has dementia, you can't really listen to what they say, but the way he says it sparks something in her, and she starts this kind of investigation, amateur investigation, to see if there was a murder he may have committed, you know.
And now I went to the Kickstarter site and read a little something, and it said this is based on experience as a caretaker.
Well, not
is that what was I reading there?
Nothing like that, but me and my writing partner and co-director are both caretakers. So we just mean our experience of taking care of the elderly and just capturing not the criminal element.
Oh, no, I didn't think that.
But the element of, old people who seem very harmless, but still had this past that, you know,
who,
it makes
can
you
I
wonder.
Ask, who did you have to be a caretaker for?
Different people, mainly there's a couple different people's dementia, or, you know, that I was a caretaker for and he was, yeah.
No kidding.
You know, it's just a question of, like, when we see old people, they all seem, you know, fairly harmless, but that's the generation that used to be, you know, the people, you know, doing all the good stuff and all the bad stuff. So it's like, you know, I think there's a little trick we play where we think they must never have had this, you know, like there's a, you know.
I heard my.
They've always been harmless.
I heard my grandfather say the N-word like a year or so ago.
Well, that's every grandpa.
It was like, no. I don't want to believe that you ever said that. No.
Yeah, he's so old, that's probably the politically correct term at the time.
They don't still say that? No, sir. No, they do not.
But it was just like an interesting idea we had, and we developed it, and then we were like, you know, let's make it into a short film, something we can make. We've always wanted to make. So we've written so many screenplays, and we've never really, like, I've made some shorts on my own, but this is the first time we've working together, and it's, you know, we raised like $30,000 really quickly. But it's going to cost more. So
I was just going to ask you that. So how, that doesn't quite.
Well,
cover
we hit
everything.
The goal. We hit the goal early.
Goal was 30,000.
But our Kickstarter is still running for like 7 more days.
Okay.
So if you want to donate, we still need about $10,000 more to really make it the way in which it can be good. So any amount helps. So donate now if you want. Go to memoryroommovie.com. That's memoryroommovie.com and donate. And there's different awards when you donate. This my intention wasn't to make this a plug, but it kind of naturally flowed into that.
I want it to be a plug.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So
I'm trying to help you.
Donate now. There's cool different rewards when you donate. One of my t-shirts, that's one of the rewards.
I'm looking at some of them right here, yeah.
Yeah.
Your name in a production. I like this one. Be in the movie virtually for $1,000.
Yeah. We've had a bunch of backers for that.
It says, we'll frame a photo of you and hang it visibly on the wall in one of the scenes.
Yeah.
Your beautiful face will be there watching over all the drama. No inappropriate photos permitted. Have you seen any of the people sent their
photos? Well, we haven't. My friend donated, and they sent me a picture they wanted. It was like a goofy picture of them and their cats.
Okay.
But it's like a very surreal photograph. I don't know if he's joking or not, but there's a refrigerator in the movie with pictures on the refrigerator. So yeah, we're looking for people, and we have some victims of murders in it, pictures of that. So hopefully people can be a part of that too.
You know? How about the Kickstarters always seem to have like one very high tier where it's like for $1 million we'll sell you the movie or something. And for yours it's $10,000, and you are the production company. The movie will open saying insert a blah blah blah, insert your name, production. No one's taken you up on that yet.
No one has taken me up on that, but a couple of people have taken up on the 3K.
Nice.
Which is pretty cool.
Have you ever helped a Kickstarter campaign?
Yes.
Yes.
I guess I'd say yes no matter what, because I'm talking about people donating to mine. But yeah, well, my friend Isabel Hagen, has she been here? Very funny.
No, but I know who that is.
She's
never met, but I'm familiar with the name.
She made a feature, and she raised a lot of money. We actually built a lot of our... She helped me a lot with organizing the Kickstarter, so a lot of the donation tiers are completely cribbed from her ideas.
Okay.
But, like, she made it. I donated to that, and I've donated to others, too. You know what I mean?
Sure.
She just made a movie, which is pretty awesome. Like a feature, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice. Where will we see that? Do you have an idea?
It's not done yet, but I think she's going to, I think it's going to go through try to get through all the film festivals and stuff and try to get, distributed.
Let's talk about the short film you have on YouTube, You Will Never Become President.
Okay, yeah.
With Joe.
Yeah.
Joe List. I watched that the other day.
Oh,
and,
nice.
And there is a part where, I'm going to tell you, I made the mistake of reading some of the comments before I watched it. So I sort of was like, oh, there's going to be some sort of, emotions might be coming up here.
Uh-huh,
might get hit with some emotions. So I think that it was in the back of my mind as I'm watching
it. Right, right.
But still, Ronan, there was a part where I wrote it down here so I would get the word for word here. Chills. I got chills.
Oh, really?
And I did not start crying, but my eyes were like,
I'll take it. I'll take it.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to give the line away, but it's a line that the woman on the phone says.
What's the line?
You're a good kid.
Oh.
When she keeps saying you're a good kid.
Oh, yeah. Oh, thanks.
That really hit me.
Thanks. That means a lot. Yeah. I mean, it's, it was my first thing I really like, non-sketch I tried to make. It's a very simple thing. I was proud of it. I think some people are like, just want everything to just be comedy. You know what I mean? But it's like, I'm not making a sketch.
Yeah, right.
I mean, like, I don't know. But to me, I like making it. Joe's just like a great actor. And I thought it was a story that, I find relatable and, deals with thoughts I have and, feelings I have about death and stuff.
Yeah,
so,
no, it's good.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Yeah. No, I was proud of it. Some people said some really moving stuff. It's funny when you post stand-up clips, people say nice shit, but a lot of people just roast you. It's like, just like brutal.
Yeah.
But then with a short film, like very little roasting. It's like, I don't know, when you're not doing comedy, it's like a lot more. I mean, there's the occasional like gay, what I mean? But like,
that's love in 2024.
That's kind of funny, yeah. But there's, it's amazing how, first of all, you're not in it. And how, if it's just a story and not talking about a topic that people are very heated about.
Sure.
Boy, does it feel a lot better.
Right? A nice break from that stuff?
Yeah,
no kidding. I also watched deleted scenes, Schindler's List.
Oh, wow. You're going through my whole canon.
Yes, and then I watched some films that your parents made when you were a baby. You're like in the swimming pool.
Yeah,
those lack editing, I have to say.
The Schindler's List sketch is very funny if you know Schindler's List. When I made it, I thought everyone knew Schindler's List. I just assumed I'm in my own little bubble. So I will confidently say, if you know that movie, it's very funny.
I do.
If you don't know the movie, you probably won't maybe get it. I don't know. But I think it's really funny. The day we were filming it, the actor playing, who's originally going to play Schindler, was not Jewish.
Are you talking about Matthew Broussard?
Yeah, but he is Jewish. But the original actor was not Jewish.
Okay.
And as we were about to film, he just is like, kind of had a freak out. I was like, I can't do this.
No way.
I guess he just thought it'd be too offensive, like playing like a Nazi as a...
No shit.
And I was just kind of like, it was kind of, I don't blame him. I just think it's the culture we're in right now, which is like, especially at the time, it was a while back, everyone's so worried about just being attacked for jokes or in trouble. It's just an awful place to be in, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not, like, one of those, like, I hate anti-woke people. I think anyone who builds their identity on wokeness or non-wokeness is kind of the same side of the same moronic coin. But, like, it is true that it sucks that people feel like they can't even, like, do something funny because they're worried, you know what I mean? Even though, like, a Jew had wrote and directed the sketch.
Right.
If you don't know the idea, I mean, it's just simply the idea of, like, if someone... was when Schindler made the list of Jews, if he left someone off because he didn't like that guy, and just kind of dealing with that, and he walked out, and we were renting the space for a very short amount of time, and Broussard, we just called him, and he rushed right over on his bike, and he barely had time to learn the lines, and he was so funny. Broussard's great.
Great. Yeah. He's been here a bunch of times.
He's so funny, and. And like I was, you know, I'm glad, you know, it worked out.
I love that. I love that. Did I? I think I might have got this wrong, but I wrote it down at some point, maybe in the last month or two. It was somebody. I'm going to assume it was me listening to Tuesdays with Stories. Probably, I think it was Joe List quoting you, saying, "Ronan said, as a comic, you're never working and always working." Does this sound familiar? Something that you said?
Yeah, like you're always, yeah, exactly, yeah. Like you're like, you always feel kind of like you're not, like you know, you don't have a 9-to-5, but you're also never not. Like, I've been to so many places, but I can't tell you the last time I was on vacation where I didn't have a gig, you know what I mean? It's like you're always on vacation and never on vacation.
Yeah.
It is a weird place, you know? I feel like I constantly have to work at all times.
And now we're sitting here talking about, you know, short films and,
yeah.
you know, but you're also currently you're in Minneapolis.
Right, right.
Because you're a stand-up doing stand-up.
Right. But I also wake up every morning and take an hour-long bath while I read. So it's like a weird, it's hard to say. I'm like, oh, you know, so it's a weird mix. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There is leisure time.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to be like really motivated and to do, you know, pretty much everything, you know, yourself, you know. Especially now. Now we're all each other's. Everyone is like their own managers and everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last year when you were here, you we ended it with, we had talked about, you know, the whole crowd work phenomenon
and all that jazz.
And then like one of the very last things we said, we're like, well, I'll probably see you in a year and we'll do an update and see if anything's changed.
On crowd work?
Yes.
That's so funny.
And you were like, well, yeah, I mean, a year from now, that's all I'll be doing, I'm sure.
That's so funny. Now I just think about Israel. Crowd work's been replaced by that.
Who saw that coming? That's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you can't get too wrapped up in this shit, because it does change and fade. And honestly, like, I guess people are still doing crowd work clips, but everyone's sick of it. And, you know, as I assumed, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't mind, like, people got, first of all, I think anyone should be able to do whatever they want to get ahead, because this is a tough business. I mean, not anything, but like.
Anything?
But if someone wants to just do crowd work, if that shit works, get ahead. Because I performed to too many places with, you know, I get all pure about how, you know, values. And then you look out in the audience and there are only 8 people. And it's like, do whatever you can to fucking do it. I don't know. I mean, like, I think crowd work ultimately, like, I mean, if you can show, if you can express yourself through it, then that's great. But if you're just kind of being a hack, but also that doesn't matter, because if you're a hack, you're probably a hack anyway. So what difference does it make? And also, there's no one's a hack. Everyone thinks they're like good for the most part. Everyone's like, you know what I mean? So like, hack is just something someone else calls people. Yeah. So like, whatever. I don't know. If you want to do, you know, if you, you know, it's not, you know, it's not my job to. It just hurts my soul a little. Because I think comedy is about a point of view, you know, and I think when you're in that crowd work thing, you're kind of a lot of times, not always, but often dealing with these really broad generalizations.
I'm going to read something that you posted March 22nd, 2023.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's been a while. But this, you posted this since last time you were here with me, so it's not that old. This is a comedy club Yelp review that you reposted.
Oh, yeah.
It says, this person's review said, I had a wonderful time at the comedy club last night. The first comedian asked what someone did for a living, and the person said, laying pipe, and oh my God, the places the comedian went after that. I was on the floor laughing. The next comedian asked every single person in the audience where they were from. One was from Croatia, and the comedian didn't know where that was, and it was hilarious. I could relate, because I'm also stupid. The third comedian had jokes, and it really bummed everyone out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always tough. Like, Joe's always like, you know, you shouldn't post shit about, you shouldn't, like, Joe's like, he's like, don't talk shit about people because, like, they're there. You're going to see them, you know? And that's always tough for me. It's like, it's hard. You don't want to talk, you know, especially that laying pipe thing. That was like a clip of someone. But, like, you know, I don't want to talk too much shit about other comics or make them feel bad. But I also feel the need to have my own voice.
Yeah,
and if everyone else is going to be just doing crowd work, I feel like I have to like have my own identity.
Yes, you should.
We're all just having a niche, and my niche is hating the niches that are working out for everyone else.
Yeah,
but you don't. You know, you got to be careful. You don't want to go. And I don't mean this in an insulting way. You don't want to go full Andy Kindler, where you just hate. Where it's just like a complete. You know what I mean? You like. You need to be balanced to some degree. And you need to realize, like, you're like, I see a lot of comics now just openly talking shit about other comedians.
Oh, yeah.
Mostly celebrities. And I'm not like, I get it. You should be able to speak, you know, these people are doing fine. But if you are a professional comedian, just know you are going to run into those people at some point.
Yeah.
And those people are human beings. And, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I mean, you might. It might be a little uncomfortable, and they might not deserve your...
Yeah. It's you know. Sure you're sending things out into the void, but it's not always a void. Falling on ears sometimes.
I felt really weird when, like, everyone just, like, publicly went after Seinfeld. You know what I mean? It's like... He said something about the left, like, it's really hard to put on, like, a... It's like the wokeness has made it really hard to put on, like, a really funny sitcom.
Yeah.
And then everyone attacked him and was like, that's not true. What about these shows from 20 years ago? Which just proved his point. But, like, everyone attacked and went after him. And part of me is like, I get it, but, like, you know, like, show some respect.
Yeah, damn right.
He is an influence, and, like, he's not 100% wrong. And he also isn't insulting an individual, but you're insulting him. That's the other thing. Sometimes I feel like people espouse an idea, and then you will insult them. And I'm like, that's way worse.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'll make fun of Republicans, and then someone will be like, fuck you, you fat piece of shit. And I'm like, don't you see you're the... I'm just making fun of an idea. Or not an idea, but...
That's funny.
But I'm just saying, like, you know, a lot of people... Someone went after him and goes, he hasn't even been funny since the 80s.
Oh,
and
stop.
It's like, if you don't... If you can't... Joe brought this up, but if you can't remember Seinfeld was in the 90s, you don't deserve to do comedy.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
It's like...
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I think there's... You know, my friend Luke has this idea that, like, the mobster thing, Merta, like, silence. You should never, you know, the code of silence with comics, you know? I don't fully, I've thrown a couple jabs at Matt Rife, you know? But he is designed to just annoy me. And he's so hateable. But, like, for the most part, I just think it's, like, rude. I'm a hypocrite, but I just think it's a little, like, unnecessary to go after every, like, famous person.
I hear you.
That's
pretty funny. Is there anything else we should be mentioning before I cut you loose? Who people need to come to Acme this weekend and see you. Keep an eye out for the short film you're making. I know you said you're doing a fundraiser
show. Yeah, donate to the fundraiser. And,
New York next week?
Yeah, I kind of woke up from a nap, so I'm funnier on stage, trust me. If you're thinking about coming, I feel like I've been like a downer. I just woke up from a nap. But come to the show, very funny.
Yes, it's very funny. He's very funny. You're very funny. And interesting and insightful on a podcast.
Yeah, so well thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, we'll do this again, hopefully, in another year or so. And
yeah.
Finally, also just a reminder that if you come to the show, you can leave with one of those cool T-shirts.
Hell yeah, come on out.
Awesome.
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.